This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Jim Hyers, director of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Good to have you in the studio. And you've been director of the food bank for how long?
I've been here 8 years. I came in May of 2005.
And how did you come to this position?
Well, several years ago, I was managing cable TV systems in the Chicago area. And our director of public affairs said I needed to present a check at a local food bank. And I was pretty busy. And I said, well, you know, you guys can do that today. And she kept insisting, you need to go do this. You need to do this. Huh. And I said, we raised quite a bit of money. It was about $8,000.
Wow.
And so she convinced me to go over to this to the food bank, and I went to the food bank, did the obligatory check presentation with the photo op, and then I made the fatal mistake by saying, what is it you really do? Huh. And when they explained to me what they did, I said to the then executive director, Dennis Smith, this is something I might be interested in.
Really?
Within weeks, I had a meeting with he and his board president and his development director. I'm on a committee, then I'm on the board, and several years later, I'm running my own food bank.
Wow. Now, the Eastern Illinois Food Bank covers quite a region. Now, this program is heard in Eastern Illinois and mid-central western Indianapolis, well, really all the way from Chicago to Indianapolis. How big of an area do you have to be concerned about hungry people?
Well, there are we cover 13 counties in eastern Illinois, okay, all the way from Watseka in the north and Iroquois County to Clay County in the south. 8,000 square miles and a population of around 530,000 people.
Half a million people. Wow. And do you have estimates of how many people have food insecurities in that region?
About one in five.
Is wow. There?
And right now, we know by the research that we do on a quadrennial basis every 4 years, we serve approximately 100,000 different individuals every year. 100,000 out of 530,000.
Where does your funding come from?
Well, most of it comes from private and donations. Individual and events are about 38% of our revenue. We get an additional programming revenue about 21%. Grants, 15% or so, another 15% from corporate donations and organizations. And then we operate a contract with the state of Illinois to the delivering of federal commodities, and we get paid to do that, and that's about 9% of our total budget.
Oh, really? Oh. But you don't get any money from the federal government or the state government for your regular operations?
No. If we occasionally can write for a grant to do, for example, 3 years ago, we wrote for a grant to replace a roof, and we received money to do that through a program that the federal government had. But it was not direct funding. It was granted funding.
Okay.
Competitive.
How long have there been food banks in this country?
Well, food banks began about 35 years ago with a gentleman named John Van Hingle, who was driving by a restaurant in Phoenix, Arizona, and watched him dumping the food in a dumpster at the end of the day, and he thought how cruel that was. So he
what
made
a waste.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he made a deal to pick this up and drop it by soup kitchens. Huh. And then he said, well, if there's soup kitchens, grocery stores are throwing things away. So he made deals to pick up and deliver them to food pantries. And that actually started the movement. And we've been in existence for 30 years, since 1983.
Here at the Eastern Illinois Food Bank.
Eastern Illinois Food Bank, yes.
Okay. How did this food bank get started back in 83?
Well, we were a part of a vision by the name of John Arnold and a local group of people, and a gentleman named Vern Fine, who's been a fixture in the not-for-profit world and community for a long time.
He's very imaginative, very dedicated, very focused, and really has helped start a number of wonderful agencies here in Champaign-Urbana, in central Illinois, as you say.
Well, he did, and Vern was a part of that first group, and he tells wonderful stories about getting that started. Three communities got together, Champaign, Springfield, and Peoria, and interested citizens, and said, we will start this a food bank to cover central Illinois. turned out to be a Herculean task to cover that much geography and that many agencies. So within a year, Peoria spun off and started their own food bank, and Champaign-Urbana spun theirs off and began. So with that start in roughly 1982, with one food bank serving the entire central part of the state, there are now three.
And for people who are listening who may have no idea what a food bank does, give us a rundown. Where does the food come from and where does it go?
Well, the best way to describe what we do is we're the people that put the food in food pantries, the soup in soup kitchens, and the snack in snack programs. Food banks do not normally serve individuals directly. People can't come to our warehouse and get a bag of food. We provide those to those, in our case, 220 programs in East Central Illinois. About 32% of that food comes through corporate food donations, people like Kraft, who just celebrated their 50th anniversary, and we celebrated that with them on Friday, Quaker Oats, ConAgra, Campbell Soup, and those kinds of large groups. Then,
now, why are they giving food away?
Well, most of them tend to be manufacturing mistakes, overruns. It could be a labeling issue. Initially, we used to get far more of our food donated. Approximately 40% was donated that way. But that when you pass that little key fob thing at the grocery store, that's an inventory control item.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot more on-time production now than it used to be.
Uh-huh.
And also quality control in food manufacturing has improved dramatically, so they don't make errors. But they're still very generous with us with the food that they do have. And we're very grateful for that.
And I interrupted. You were giving the overall picture of where the food comes from. You said that much comes from the manufacturers. And then what else?
23% we get from other food banks. That's why we can keep our costs so low. We leverage our membership at the Feeding America network of food banks, approximately a little over 200 food banks like us around the country. And we're considered a small, mid-sized food bank. And we work with them. For example, several years ago, I was able to have donated to me 6 semi-loads of Capri Sun beverage. Well, I can't use 6 semi-loads, but I traded it for semi-loads of cereal and various things from other food banks around the country. Using that leveraging helps us leverage the fact that if you give us a dollar, we can leverage it into about $10 worth of food.
Wow.
The rest of it, we purchase about 20% of the food. We actually buy it just like a wholesaler, just like a JM or not a wholesaler would, like Kroger or anybody else would have to do it. Then our government programs, which are the federal commodity program, which we get is about 19%. And then we get other kinds of sources, we get about 4%. And those are occasional things we just fall into, like a bulk product kind of thing. Only 2% of our food actually comes from food drives.
Huh. Interesting. Now, I know you get some fresh food from a local CSA, a local community-supported agriculture group.
Oh, we do. It's Sol de Gracia on in Champaign, or in Urbana, rather, is one of the CSAs. We've been getting food from CSAs over a number of years, small amounts, but this is the first time we were actually given memberships in a CSA.
Oh.
So we really appreciate that. This year that just ended, we distributed 1.3 million pounds of fresh produce.
Fresh produce. Wow.
That was an incredible. Our goal. I challenged the staff 2 years ago to get us to 1 million pounds.
Uh-huh.
And we did last year for the first time. This year we increased that by another 20 to 25%.
Wow.
And we're very, very pleased about that.
So that's healthy food as well as fresh and some of it organic. And that's wonderful.
Oh, it is, right.
Yeah, the Sol de Gracia Community Sport and Agriculture Farm is at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church in Urbana. And I know they just have done wonderful work the 2 years they've been in operation.
Yes, they have, and I think the fact that we pick up fresh and that that product is used very quickly, primarily by soup kitchens and shelters who can use fresh garden produce because it's not the same quantity we get when we get our large produce donations.
Sure, sure. We're about 10 minutes into our Keeping the Faith show this Sunday night. Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who've been hearing Jim Hires talk about the Central Illinois Food, Eastern Illinois Food Bank. And if you'd like to ask him a question or make a comment or perhaps share what you know about food that's come to perhaps a food pantry that you help with in an agency or a congregation, do give us a call. Our numbers are 333-9455. That's in Champaign-Urbana, if you're in the 217 area code here in Illinois. If you're listening long distance, we're happy to have your calls. There's a toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Let me repeat that. If you're in the 217 area code in Illinois, punch in 333-WILL. If it's long distance, 800-222-WILL. And we know many people are listening online, and you may use the toll-free number no matter where you are. Where are you if you're hearing this live? We are broadcasting in the last part of July in the year 2013. I know many people listen to the show on podcasts at their convenience. Our shows are archived, and so we know many people hear this after it's actually broadcast live. But if you are listening live, do give us a call if you'd like to contribute a question or a comment. Jim Hires, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Casey, Illinois, or KZ, as the people in Clark County pronounce it.
Okay.
And
What was your family like?
Typical small-town family. My father was a small-town Methodist minister, and I had three siblings and grew up in kind of a Charlie Brown existence. There weren't very many adults around when we grew up because our parents were always gone and neighbors kind of looked after us. And,
uh-huh.
We had chickens in our backyard.
Now, if your father was a Methodist minister, he moved around quite a bit, right?
He did, but fortunately he maintained a kind of a circuit ridership thing for a number of years, and so we didn't move around as much. So.
We have a call from someone in Charleston. Let's go to that call. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith with Jim Hires. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Michael. I'm a professor at Eastern Illinois University and in the sociology department, and I study poverty and food insecurity, and I'm committed to hunger issues and things. And I think that, a lot of a good word, a lot of support needs to go out to Jim and the work that they're doing, because there's a large gap in the aid that people who are needy and need food and who are hungry could actually get from the government. And then there's the food banks and the food pantries and the backpack programs and the snack programs that fill in that gap where there is substantial need. So I just wanted to call in and say thank you to Jim and his organization for all that you do, because it is it's needed down here in Charleston, Coles County, all over Eastern Illinois, and all over this country. So, again, thank you very much for all that you do.
Appreciate very much. Thank you for the call.
Yes, Michael, and thank you for that endorsement. That means a great deal to us, particularly coming out of Coles County. It's one of our counties that we've spent a lot of time and focus in.
And when a professor who studies these kind of issues says you're doing a good job, that's a good imprimatur.
It is. Yes, it is.
We have another caller waiting on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith with Jim Hires. Go ahead.
Yes.
Line number one.
Could you tell us about some of the soup kitchen arrangements in this area that you supply?
What are some of the soup kitchens?
Yes, I can. You know, because we're such a we have micro-urban area. We're not an urban center, so we don't have a large number of soup kitchens, but we have some very, very good soup kitchens, particularly in Champaign and Danville. In our area, for example, in Champaign, it's the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, and then the Salvation Army runs a good program, as does the mental health department in Champaign, in Mattoon. There are Mattoon PADS and Salvation Army, and in Danville there are several in Danville with admissions. We would like to see more activity in those, and particularly in our micro urban areas. Those seem to be pretty well funded in a lot of cases, and they do a very good job of providing for the need. Obviously, it's about finances for those individuals.
Sure.
And so we encourage people to support those, particularly in areas where homeless population is starting to rise.
I know the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen here in Champaign-Urbana has many volunteers and is meeting a tremendous need, and the support you give them in providing so much of the food is just a great service.
And I think there's a misconception in terms of food insecurity. The faces of hunger have changed dramatically over the last several years. 40% of everybody who visits a food pantry has a working adult in the family. So
they have a job, it may be a part-time job, minimum wage.
Sure. I use Champaign County as an example because it's our largest county. A family of four must make around $45,000 to have a sustainable living. That's paying the mortgage, having enough food, child care, and health care. And that doesn't get you a ticket to a Cubs game, you know, that type of thing. So when you have that kind of income required, you have a lot of people who stretch and stretch and stretch to make it work. And unfortunately, when it comes crunch time in families, the thing that they give up are the quality of food that they eat.
And so they could go to food pantries, they could go to soup kitchens, they could supplement things that way.
They can, and I think our business has grown. One, I think we're better at identifying the areas and better at getting food out to people, but also the need has grown, and it's been the working poor that has driven that.
Huh. We're talking with Jim Hires of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank about their programs. One of the ones that you just mentioned was, one of our callers mentioned, was the backpack program. And I happen to know that there's a local service club, the Urbana Rotary Club, that's going to be handing you a check for $10,000 this week.
Yes, I plan to have lunch with you.
For that particular program in the Washington School in Urbana. Tell us about the backpack program.
Well, the backpack program began 8 years ago, actually, as a project of the Junior League of Champaign County. Or Champaign-Urbana, and they partnered with the food bank. And we opened with 50 students at Garden Hill School in one school district, in one building. Now we have five counties and 18 programs. And last year we put out almost 21,000 sacks of food in backpacks for kids to go home on weekends. It's for students who are identified that teachers and school personnel know are food insecure over the weekends, and making sure that they get food to them and their families, believe it or not, because we just completed a study with the University of Illinois on the effects of backpack programs in families and on the school behaviors of the kids involved in those programs.
And you found out?
It was what we found out was very, very different than what we thought we would find out.
Really?
Yes.
You were surprised.
We were. We were very surprised. There was some indication that attendance was better. But what we found out was that the people tended to have a lot more needs than could ever be met. So it was a good conversation place and a place to start to develop an ethos of care for families. And we also found out that the larger the family, the more apt the child was to eat all the food by themselves.
Really?
If it was smaller families, they shared more. Huh. So we started then saying, what's the next logical thing for us to do to meet that need? And that sprang up this year we launched our first four school pantries in four of our areas, which is just a natural extension of what the backpack program
is. So it was clear that there were young people, students in grade school and middle school and so on, who were hungry, and they needed more food.
And their families.
And the families, yeah.
So And it's been amazing how the support that that program has gotten, and it's a very direct way to provide food for children.
We're about 20 minutes into our Keeping the Faith program, and I'd like to pause for a short announcement from WILL about the Focus program that will be coming up on tomorrow, the Focus program. Focus program tomorrow. We'll hear an announcement now about that.
What makes you happy? That's a serious question for U of I psychologist Ed Diener. He's a pioneer researcher in the study of happiness, how to measure it, and how it benefits you besides just making you feel good. On an encore presentation of Focus, Professor Diener talks about the study of happiness and well-being and why its pursuit is more than a personal affair. I'm Jim Meadows. Join us on Focus Monday morning at 10 on AM 580.
And that's tomorrow here in July of 2013, if you're listening to this program live. Jim Meadows with Focus on AM 580. This program is also heard simultaneously at WILL 90.9 FM HD3 and online at will.illinois.edu. You can go to that website to hear archive programs. If you've missed part of this program, perhaps you're driving and have somewhere else to go. But we're happy to say that you can hear the rest of this at your convenience on many different devices, computers and phones and all kinds of things. So WILL works hard to make our locally produced content available to you at your convenience. We're talking with Jim Hires today. I might just say that next week we'll be playing a pre-recorded program that was done about 10 days ago with the relatively new president of a Chicago seminary, Frank Yamada. He'll be talking about how seminary education has changed, and there have been some fascinating changes in seminaries. And we'll be talking with a young and creative seminary president from Chicago. That's August 4th, 2013. On August 11th, we have a very special program with an internationally known songwriter and performer, recording artist, social activist, Carrie Newcomer. Many of you know her music and love it, and we're delighted that she's going to talk with us by phone about her various causes, where she's gone internationally for the State Department of this country representing America. And she's a fascinating person, and we're looking forward very much to that interview. I'd like to thank Kyle Crow for helping suggest that person and find contact her and do the work of a producer to get her to be on the show August 11, Carrie Newcomer. And then on August 18, Islam and the Challenge of Civilization is a brand new book. The author is a French scholar, novelist, poet, a difficult first name, I'll try to pronounce it right, Abdelwahab Medib, M-E-D-D-E-B, Islam and the Challenge of Civilization. We're going to be talking with the translator of that book from the French, Professor Jane Kuntz from the University of Illinois. She has translated others of Medib's books, and we're delighted to have her be in the studio and talking about this interesting book on Islam. That's August 18. And then our final program on Keeping the Faith. We've been doing this for 14 years, and I've been privileged to be able to volunteer to host this show and produce it and find guests. And but the very last show will be August 25th. And well, we're trying to have a little special show for that day, and so tune in and be surprised. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host, but let me thank some other people: Stan Yanchis and Don Dolan, Becca Guyette, and Danny Otto have all been people who have filled in for me very helpfully, often with fascinating interviews when I was gone or needed a break. And over the last 14 years, they've all been very helpful with this program, particularly Don Dolan. He's been here from the very start and has helped out, I think, several times each of the last 14 years. So Many thanks to him. He's a retired professor from Parkland of Philosophy and Religion. Well, getting back to our interview today, talking with Jim Hires, son of a Methodist minister, but it happens that the food bank, although there were many clergy involved in getting it started, I know nationally and locally, you have to be neutral in terms of who you give food to. You have to
understand that almost 85% of all emergency food is handled through faith-based organizations that run the gamut of all the faiths that we come in contact with in the community. So we work with all faiths, all churches, primarily church groups,
mosques, synagogues, temples. Sure.
We've got wonderful, wonderful support because that one thread, and John Arnold, the founder of our food bank, put together a book of all the sayings and of scripture and references to feeding hungry people from the Torah, the Quran, and the Bible, from Buddha teaching and from Hindu teaching, and he put it in a book. And every major religion in the world reference our responsibility to take care of those who are less fortunate and are in need. And it was remarkable when he gave that lecture.
I remember in one of the books of C.S. Lewis that I studied in graduate school, he had an appendix on the morals, the values, the ethics, ethical teachings of all the major world religions of his time. Of course, that was 70 years ago. But it was fascinating to see how much similarity there is.
I think the basic goodness of people drive what we do. And I think that if you talk about the people who got involved in food banking, their story is not much different than mine. They were taken up because this is a way you can directly serve. And, and the fact that we have 1,400 registered volunteers at our food bank.
1,400 volunteers.
Registered volunteers.
Wow.
That we use on a regular basis.
And how big is your staff?
We have 18 full-time equivalents, 18 and a half full-time equivalents.
And tell us about your buildings and where the food goes when it's donated by corporations or by CSAs or whatever, or individuals.
Well, we have a large warehouse located in Urbana, Illinois. It's about 39,000 square feet. We just did a major improvement by adding about 60% more freezer capacity because of the increase in fresh and frozen food that we now get versus canned goods. We have a fleet of four trucks that are on the road every day.
What size trucks?
They're mostly 22 to 28 foot trucks. They're not semis because they're delivery trucks that
sure.
have to get in and out of these agencies. And again, we have 220 programs we visit over time. About 40% of our agencies actually elect to come in, pick up the food at our warehouse, and then 60% of it we actually deliver. There's no charge for delivery of food to anybody. The food that we get donated to us, we cannot charge for that. We do charge us what's called a share maintenance fee. That's so we can pay for the lights and the freezer and the truck driver and the gas. And it averages around 8.5 to 10 cents a pound. The correlation I give it is if you bought a box of cereal at the store, it's about $3.50. If you got that box of cereal at the food bank, the food pantry will pay 17 cents for it. So that's because of our way to leverage. Oh. And then the rest of the money we get to from the operation, obviously, is through our fundraising.
Oh. And I know you have a fundraiser coming up that's very creative with the Prairie Fruits Farm in Urbana, Illinois. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. Prairie Fruits Farm, a organic raised farm that produces goat's milk and fresh produce.
Cheese.
And it's very well known, I guess, in restaurant circles all around the state. One of their chefs from Chicago, Rick Bayless, who owns Fonterra Grill and is a very famous, world-renowned chef, is offered to do a fundraiser for Prairie Fruit Farms with the proceeds coming to the food bank, and that's going to be held in early October. And more information will be coming later on in the month of August as the details are worked out.
You don't have a definite date for that
yet? It's October 6th.
Oh, October 6th. Okay.
And I don't know exactly the dates the tickets will go on sale. There are a very, very limited number of tickets, let's say. And so we will be having people check our website, or if they're on our email list, they'll be notified when those things are
and
available.
What's the website for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank?
EIfoodbank.org.
That's easy. E, the letter E, and I, and then foodbank.org. And if people go to that website, how do they get on your mailing list or your email list so they'll hear about things like...
They're asked if they would like to be on our okay. email. And then you just fill that simple format. Also, you can register to volunteer on that website. And it's a great website. You'll learn a great deal. We're actually in the process of rebuilding that over the next couple of months, and we're very excited about that, because we talk to a lot of people every day who are you know, very vital to our operation.
Right. Well, because National Public Radio and WILL, we ourselves as a public radio station ask listeners for donations. We cannot ask on the air for donations to other organizations, as good as they may be. So we're not doing that when we mention this Prairie Fruits Farm benefit for the... But people who might be interested in that could go online and find out about it.
We would like for them to come to our website and find out about the food bank, because it's really about advocacy, too. I mean, you know, the food insecurity rate is phenomenal. In Champaign County, for example, I just made a quick note. There are 16.5% of people in Champaign County are food insecure. Champaign County. That is almost 33,000 people.
Oh.
And that's
counting children.
Counting children.
Yeah.
And about one in four children in our area are food insecure.
Now, that phrase is relatively new. And I noticed the professor from Eastern who called in used it, to food insecurity. Why do you say that instead of hunger?
Food insecurity and hunger. Hunger is a condition caused by food insecurity. That is the fact that I have nothing to eat, and hunger food insecurity leads to hunger, because it's defined as sometime during a week or a month, I may not know where I'm going to be able to get a meal or feed my children or have enough, or the adults in the family don't eat because there's just enough for the children, or if you're a senior, you've skip two meals so you can pay for your prescription medicine or a heating bill. So, and there's a definition on severe food insecurity, food insecurity is basically hunger.
Okay.
But it kind of covers a lot more accurate term.
Okay. Now, Jim Hires, you've served for the last several years, 3.5 years, I think you mentioned, on the Governor's Commission for the Elimination of Poverty. How is poverty related to food insecurity and hunger and the food bank?
Well, I think basically food insecurity and poverty are connected, obviously. Hunger is a condition of poverty. If we could solve some issues around poverty, I think we could improve people's lives so that they can have access to quality food and to good food. So I have a vested interest in improving, you know, in raising people out of poverty in the state of Illinois, because my numbers will go down. We've often said we need to be able to feed the line, but we need to be able to shorten the line. And so a lot of our activity and advocacy is around shortening the line. And so I was happy to serve on the Poverty Commission. This commission was put together in 2008 to start making recommendations to the legislature about what can be done to decrease the number of people who are living in extreme poverty. That's a family of four living on $10,100 a year or less. And they make recommendations to the legislature in terms of tax issues around tax rebates or job opportunities or extending educational opportunities to people who don't have them, so they can get training to get, obviously, jobs is the big thing, creating work for people.
Now, the United Nations has had a series of recommendations for all countries around the world on some of these issues, particularly as they are affected by human rights. Your commission has considered that, I know.
Well, the commission, when it was first founded, and I attended my first commission meeting, every commission member was handed a copy of the Declaration of Human Rights from the United Nations. And I carry that in my suit pocket. I don't often wear a suit anymore since I left the cable TV world. But it's in my vest pocket or my coat pocket. And when I'm out, sometimes I pull that out and just read it. And the basis for the Poverty Commission's work was based around the Declaration of Human Rights, that people do have a right to eat, and people do have a right to be pulled up from where they are, or at least given the opportunities. And we have an obligation to create opportunities where we can for people to move forward. And if the solution isn't the government doing it or the private sector doing it or individuals doing it, it's for all of us to do this together.
Let me give an opportunity to listeners to Keeping the Faith today. If you're listening live here in July of 2013, do give us a call. The phone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, where the program originates in the studio of WILL on the U of I campus, you may punch in 333-9455. That's in the 217 area code. If it's long distance, punch in 800-222-9455. We're happy to have listeners join this conversation with Jim Hires, H-I-R-E-S, Director of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. The numbers again, 333-9455 if you're in the 217 area code. If it's long distance, 800-222-WILL. We're always eager to have listeners talk with us and ask questions. I'm happy to ask questions myself, but over the last 14 years, I've really appreciated the wisdom and the insight of so many callers. And here we have another one on line number one in Champaign. You're
Hello.
On Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Steve and Jim. This is Emmy Fisher. How are you both doing?
Hello, Emmy Fisher.
Hi. I was so happy to hear your show today. The food bank does such important work, and Jim and I have worked on a number of projects together with nonprofits throughout the years. I just want to, anybody who's listening who would like a volunteer activity or to participate in a food drive or might want to write a check, the food bank is just one of our more effective and efficient nonprofits in Central Illinois. So I would encourage people to do that. It always takes my breath away when I hear information like 33,000 people who are hungry or in that situation where they just don't get enough food, and that's so critical.
Debbie Fisher, where have you volunteered over the years?
Where?
Yeah.
Oh, well, a number of different places. United Way, probably first and foremost, but I'm also on the board for the Champaign County CASA, the Girl Scout Council in Central Illinois, just a number of things here and there. So, you know, all of these things are important, but I think people who know that an organization uses their money or their time and talent efficiently and effectively, it makes you feel really good to give to an organization like that.
Very true. And thank you for your call. Appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Thanks, Amy.
And I might just add that, as I often do when I have a guest who's representing an agency, a nonprofit organization, I check them out online. There's several good places you can go to find out how they're rated and how well they are at filling in reports and being transparent about their finances and how much people are paid and all of that. And the Eastern Illinois Food Bank is rated extremely high, and that's always reassuring when you see that that groups that rate these kind of agencies appreciate how well you do things.
Well, we have an obligation to those who donate to us to be stewards of that donation and to do the best we can to forward our mission. And our mission impact is a lot more, than, as we found out, in terms of just money. It is those 1,400 volunteers who who give of their time. We have a couple of very unique volunteer opportunities I'd like to talk to you about.
Sure, do, please.
One is that we put out an average of about 43 mobile food pantries a year in our underserved areas. And we don't have enough staff to staff those, so we came up with a concept 2 years ago of developing a title called Food Mobile Captain, because ours are called Food Mobiles. That's where we put between 7 and 10,000 pounds of food on a truck and deliver it to a site and distribute it in a couple of hours. And that is a volunteer who's trained to manage a mobile food distribution from start to finish. And the volunteers who do that come back and say, I want to do another one. I want to do another one. It's like this is like the great volunteer opportunity with us. And you have to apply to get it because it's just such an important thing. And we couldn't do that program without that. It's like our school pantry program are run by school pantry captains. Because we don't have enough staff to.
Those are volunteers.
Those are all volunteers.
Now, Jim, what do you say? We haven't had any critical questions, so let me ask a couple. What do you say about people who say, doesn't a lot of this food get resold, get taken from pantries and then sold for profit by people who aren't honest about saying that they need it?
You know, I get that question asked. I would like to say I don't know for sure. I'm sure some is. What is the percentage? I think it's extremely, extremely, extremely low.
Why do you think that?
Because the government said the fraud around SNAP, the food stamp program SNAP, is around $1 out of every 100, not the enormous thing people believe it is, because most of the food actually goes, we know that most of the food, or the large percentage goes. It's just like any other program. Bernie Madoff made off with a lot of money that people thought well, he was doing the right thing. So I think that we have to trust that. The other thing that we tell people is if you tell me, Steve, that you're hungry and your family's in need, I'm not to question that. You know that. And we do have some standards. We ask for you to self-attest that I do meet certain standards, that my family does not have the money to purchase food. But we ask that our pantries honor that. We're pretty certain that the lion's, an unbelievable amount of this food goes to where it's needed. And the fact that we do this quadrennial study every 4 years and we're in the middle of doing one right now, we actually go out and interview enough people, you get a sense of exactly what's happening.
And, of course, the schools have social workers that they know well, their students and
their
family backgrounds in many cases. And I know, too, from congregations, the volunteers we had in congregations that I've served over the years, where we have food pantries, they get to know the people, and they're not nosy, but they're friendly, and they care. They want the food to go to people who really need it, and you get pretty good whether you're giving away free clothes or free food, at finding out who's coming in and what they're like. I've been impressed with the quality of volunteers in so many different congregations.
Well, and I think you're spot on with that, particularly in the communities that we serve. And most of them, again, are faith-based. 90% of all these agencies are run strictly by volunteers. Uh-huh. There are very, very few community organizations in our 14-county area. So that's a very, very important part of that. The other thing that happens with that is that again, we talked about the ethos of care. They start understanding that there's a lot more than these people need than just food sometimes.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's the fact that finally breaking down and standing in a line, which cannot be easy. We had an issue that happened several years ago in a community in Cumberland County. A group came to us and said, we need to start a food pantry. And it's a very small town. They said, well, you have a food pantry. He said, yeah, but a group of us think we need to do something else because that food pantry is located downtown on Main Street and everybody stands in line out in front of it and they're embarrassed they won't go.
Oh.
And it's true.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's a And it's hard thing, as our workers tell us, our volunteers, the first time a person comes to a food pantry is pretty traumatic for them. And if you go on the mobile food pantry, people get teary-eyed because they'll say, I didn't think this would ever happen to me. I did everything right.
Sure.
I worked hard. I did this. You end up with a medical emergency. An elderly gentleman, he lost a job at 58, and then had a medical emergency, ended up having to go to food pantries. And he said, I just never thought it would be me.
Sure. And what about senior citizens? Have you noticed an increase in those who are receiving help from food pantries and the food bank?
I think that's our next big challenge. As the baby boomers get old, and we know now that they have not saved well. So we've got a grant from the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois last year, and this year we'll start developing strategies to address senior hunger, particularly in our rural areas.
We have another caller, this time on line number one in Urbana. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith with our guest Jim Hires from the Food Bank. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm very glad to hear about the Food Bank, and I wanted to let you know that at St. Patrick's Church in Urbana, we have a food bank, and for about 3 years now, in the fall, we have a gala dinner and call and invite all of the friends and guests who come and use the food bank, and we get a pretty good response. I have never been to it. I've given food, but I have never been to it. But I hear that it's wonderful. Everybody's very happy, and it's just a nice thing to do, to welcome them and entertain them at a dinner when we have been giving them food all year. So that's that.
Well, let you know. Thank you very much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And that was talking about a program at St. Patrick's Catholic Church on Main Street in Urbana, Illinois, where they have a food pantry and an annual dinner.
And their food pantry is a very robust pantry. They do a wonderful, wonderful job.
How do those food pantries work? Are they open a certain time of day or week?
If you receive federal commodity program, participate in that program, the rules are a little more stringent because we have to control that food. We might make sure it's all equitably delivered to the counties. So, yes, you are required to be open at least once a week. For those, a lot, if you're not, you can be open less often, and most of them have established hours. I think St. Patrick's now, I have 220 programs. I hope I get this right. They are open almost every day.
Wow.
May not be open very long, maybe 30 minutes or so. I think that's correct. But again,
But people could call.
Well, they can call the food bank, and we can, you know, or they can actually go online if they're interested. But people who often need services don't have access to the, so
sure.
we always refer people, and
people can call the individual congregations that have food banks
or food pantries and yes,
food
they can.
Pantries rather, yeah. And again, the website for the food bank is eifoodbank.org. That's all.
And you can always call us at 217-328-3663.
217-328-3663 is a phone number for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. And business hours are Monday through Friday.
Our office hours are from 7 in the morning until 3 to 3:30.
Okay.
Most of the time by 4 o'clock, you still get somebody from the office. And on Friday until 7 till noon,
okay.
Our warehouse opens very, very early in the morning, and our office personnel and warehouse people can get there by 6, 6:30 every day.
So here comes a semi-trailer truck with all kinds of food items that were mislabeled or whatever, but they're still good, they're still fresh, they're still edible and nutritious. What happens when that truck pulls up?
Well, it gets inventoried. Everything that comes in is accounted for. We must account for every pound of food.
Okay.
Have to report it on our 990 because that is a gift and has a value. And it's put into our inventory. If it's in case lot, which we like, those are in boxes of food, then it's put into our system and food pantries and soup kitchens order it by the case.
So you have forklifts that help unload these trucks.
Oh, yes. We've got people buzzing around all morning long. if we get bulk food, which we have right now, a great deal of bulk food, we actually have a clean room where we sort and repackage that, repackage cereal, beans, rice.
So you're talking about you get it in huge containers.
Oh, yes.
And you have to repackage it to send it out to the food bank.
And that's a great volunteer opportunity,
sure.
Because you can a Rotary group can come in and as a group and do a kind of a team building exercise.
Sure.
And we do a great deal of that. So that's part of the inventory
system. What age could the volunteers be?
Age, you have to be over 10. If you're under 15, you must have an adult with every student or child. And no, we do not accept any volunteers under the age of 10 regardless.
Okay.
And that's because it is a working warehouse.
Sure.
So, and then, again, our website, or you can call our office and get hooked up with a young lady by the name of Kristen Costello who runs our volunteer program very effectively.
Okay. All right, going back to that food, so then you're separating the food, some of it, into smaller packages.
And then it goes in the inventory system, and every day our pantries receive by email or the website what we have available for delivery or ordering. And they know when they're going to have a delivery, so they order it in time to do that, or we want to come and do a pickup, they order that in time, and then that creates a pick ticket. It's all pulled, gotten ready for them either to pick up or put on a truck to distribute. And that starts very, very early in the morning and runs to all throughout the afternoon. Most days our last pickups in the food bank are by noon, and the rest of the afternoon we spend picking for the next day or the following day. Like on Friday, we pick for Monday, so because our trucks, again, pull out very early in the morning. So.
You mentioned your volunteers. You mentioned your staff. You mentioned how many different programs you support throughout these many counties. And you've talked about how many people eventually get this. These numbers are just overwhelming.
Aren't they? They really are. And I think that when I throw numbers out, they go, that can't be. And I said, well, I wish they weren't. And I often say, I wish every day I didn't have this job.
Uh-huh.
But I'm grateful I'm the one that gets to do it.
Uh-huh.
It's such important work. But I'm only meeting right now, we're only meeting 40% of the known need to provide emergency food in our 14 counties. Only 40% of the known need. Now, we're getting better and better at that each year. But, I don't have enough years to work to see us get to 100%. And I don't think that'll ever happen. But we're doing an incredibly good job of addressing that. So.
What's in it for the companies? Why do they go to the trouble, which costs them money, to send a semi-truck with all this stuff to give away to a food bank? What's in it for them?
Well, one is the fact that it is a tax write-off for the food that they donate.
So it is a donation.
It's a donation. So and if they can't sell a product, the best thing to do is to give it to us. For example, if the color is off by a smidgen on a product and it can't meet a laboratory test, then that can't be sold because it doesn't meet the label standard. And there's nothing wrong with the food.
Uh-huh.
So that's when we get it. So, and the fact that a lot of them are really good corporate citizens. They believe in, for example, our store pickup program with Walmart and Meijer, Ruler Foods, Sam's Clubs, Kroger throughout the entire, as a testimony to that.
We have another caller. Let's try to get them in quickly before we run out of time. Line number one, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes, thank you for taking the call. I just have a quick question about the difference between the food bank and food pantries. We get solicitations for donations to both, and I'm wondering which is the more effective use of your donation, to donate to the food bank or to try to donate to individual food pantries?
You're asking the director of the food bank that question?
I can answer it very simply. You put your money where you feel it's going to do the most good for you and your community. The food pantry, we put the food in the food pantry. They get the food from us. About 60 to 70% of all the emergency food that is distributed in our area comes through our warehouse. So it's pretty important for us to have that relationship, and they need a sound financial commitment.
Right.
So if it's one of our members, we want them to be sound fiscally. That's way we will find a way to get them the food. Obviously, we'd like to get the money in because we can stretch a dollar and make it work. But you do what you need to do to make it viable for your community and for your family.
Well, I'm thinking more on an organizational level. As an organization, we frequently get requests to do projects, and our argument has been we think it'd be better to go straight to the supplier rather than try to divvy up our support among all the different pantries.
We found that to be true by most organizations because that is the reach is much greater that way. If it's again, business and corporate donations make up a large bulk of what we do because of the very thing you said.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate the question. We're down to just our last couple minutes, Jim. I know we haven't covered all the things you do. Is there one program I've missed asking about you'd want to mention?
Well, we wrapped up everything in childhood hunger around our Healthy Futures Initiative. We developed this 2 years ago, and it's all of our programs that affect families with children, whether it's our backpack program, our school pantry program, our mobile food pantry program, or our emphasis around fresh produce and healthy food. And to that end, we talk a great deal about nutrition. It's not just quality or quantity, it is quality. So that's the emphasis now.
Thank you so much for telling us about that program and all the other things done by the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Again, the website, eifoodbank.org, the phone number, 217-328-3663. Thank you, Jim, for being here today.
Thank you, Steve.
Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Frank Yamada, president of McCormick Theological Seminary in Chicago, about how seminary education has changed. Following week, a very special program with Carrie Newcomer, internationally known songwriter, performer, recording artist, social activist, sent out by the State Department to other countries representing America. That's August 11. August 18, Islam and the Challenge of Civilization, a new book by a professor from Paris, Professor Benib, translated by a professor from the University of Illinois and French, Jade Kuntz. Jade will be in our studio talking about Islam and the challenge of civilization. And our last program for Keeping the Faith, after 14 years, will be August 25. It'll be a special program. Tune in to find out a few surprises. I'd like to announce that tonight there's still a chance to go, if you're listening to this program live in July of 2013, to a concert at the University of Illinois Episcopal Church, St. John's Episcopal Church, tonight at 7:30. The Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana will present a choral concert. It costs $10 at the Chapel of St. John the Divine, 1101 South Wright, corner of Wright and Armory. Should be a wonderful concert with music by Brahms, Benjamin Britten, and it's called Bach and Beyond tonight, and Rachmaninoff. So that's a concert at 7:30 Sunday night, the 28th of July. Chad Alwis is the director, and they always have fascinating concerts, and encourage people to go this evening. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. Support comes from the Decatur Celebration, August 2nd through 4th in downtown Decatur. Live musical acts include Here Come the Mummies, 70s rock band Foghat, American Idol finalist Casey Abrams, and many more. Events include a karaoke competition, Razzle Dazzle Good Times Parade, and a hot dog eating contest. Details at DecaturCelebration.com. In an hour, it's To the Best of Our Knowledge, but coming up next, This American Life with Ira Glass. Tonight, it's so easy to lose perspective or worry that you've lost perspective when you're deep inside some situation. For instance, an American woman who suddenly trades her life for one in a place that most people might think twice about, Juarez, Mexico. That's on the way next here on Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580 and WILL FM 90.9 HD3 Urban.